This is Bob, Groz, and Tom.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio and streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Welcome, everyone. It is Bob, Groz, and Tom, the show of record, officially underway. Hope everybody had a great weekend.
Well, it was a great weekend. Beautiful weekend.
Weather-wise, it was awesome.
That's all I'm talking about.
Should we just talk weather for 3 hours?
After a weekend like this one, we could. It's 72 degrees and sunny. This is the most perfect place in the world.
It is nice.
There's no humidity. I still maintain that drive down I-5 when you get right to the Ship Canal Bridge, and you can see Mount Rainier hanging in the distance, and you got blue on each side and green on each side. I put it up against anywhere in the world.
These are the days I miss 99, the previous incarnation.
Yeah.
That, to me, was the best view in the city, going across 99 there.
I agree.
It was awesome. Now you're in a tunnel. Now it's a tunnel.
It looks like it's been bombed out.
Yeah, it's just, I
was driving down there by the ballpark the other day, and it was, wow.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Tonight, because a buddy and I went riding yesterday, took the motorcycles over to Bainbridge. So we're meeting down there. He's like, yeah, let's meet at this address. And I go there, and like everything, this street's blocked. There's a fence here. There are cones here. All that construction going on.
Well, looking up where the overhang was, I was thinking of Speed.
The movie Speed?
Remember where they jumped the bus?
Oh, yeah.
And so right down there by the Triangle Tavern, there's half of it is open there.
Yeah.
Except the other half's all gone.
So you can't jump onto anything.
You know, you'd be jumping to the ground. Really wasn't speed at all.
You would just splat. Sort of like the Mariners splat.
It was just a disappointment like the sporting weekend, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll get into what happened over the weekend. Our old buddy Dwayne Casey, Pistons head coach, former Raptors head coach, will join us on the program at 1 o'clock today.
He would have had an idea yesterday of what to do.
Yeah, I've seen their coach. Do you know their coach's name, by the way?
No.
Neither do we.
Well, it was not the name that I thought. And I've been watching the games, and for whatever reason, his name never seeped into my subconscious or conscious, whatever. So Tom and I were going, he goes, who's the coach of the Raptors? And I was like, it's like Bruce somebody or whatever. And we look it up, and it's Nick Nurse. We're both going, that doesn't seem right.
We're looking at it on Wikipedia. It says he's an American basketball head coach of the Toronto Raptors. We look at each other. We're like, is he?
This doesn't feel right. I feel like this is wrong.
I watched the whole game last night. I watched all game one, too. And when I saw the name Nick Nurse, I said, this does not ring a bell at all.
Yeah, it just.
I watched the game perfectly last night.
Perfectly?
Yeah. For someone who's not an NBA fan, I saw the last 2 minutes of the first half. So you see the Warriors kind of in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have about a 6-point lead. Left it on during halftime. Saw the 18-0 run, which was just unbelievable.
Incredible.
Went away, came back right when Klay Thompson got hurt at the start of the fourth quarter, and then watched the rest of the fourth quarter.
That is perfect viewing.
Yeah, it was.
You got the gist of everything that you need.
I think I did.
Now, did you see a lot of missed shots, though, from both teams?
My God,
but certainly from Toronto. You know what, though? I came in this morning. I said, I found the game to be riveting. And Sauk's like, you found it to be riveting? I said, yeah, I'm a college basketball fan. I'm used to those kinds of missed shots.
Missed shots left and right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
I was right at home watching that.
I thought Toronto I want to use the C word, but I mean, when you use Thompson during the game, you know, you're without – Curry is shooting, what did he shoot, 35%? I mean, he is not having a good shooting night either.
He had some good runs in there.
He did have some good runs in there.
But overall, he didn't shoot well.
He was down.
Kawhi Leonard didn't shoot particularly well, except from the free throw line. What was he, 16 of 16,
yeah.
I think.
You're home. You got to win that game. I saw a thing on Deadspin which compared it to the J.T. Smith game last year, which kind of took Cleveland out.
J.R. Smith.
J.R. Smith, forgive me, the timeout that he didn't call.
Oh, yeah.
And they said this one wasn't quite as bad as that one. But if I'm the Raptors, I am kicking myself today. What an opportunity lost.
It was an opportunity, but, I mean, they just didn't make the shots. It wasn't – I wouldn't compare it to J.R. Smith from last year. That was just a bonehead mistake.
Wasn't losing it on one play, although
– Right. It was over the course of many minutes and many missed shots. I mean, if you don't make the shots, what do you want? There were some bad shots, but they also had open looks all night. That's the thing, is they had open looks. They were taking good shots. They just weren't falling. What can you do?
Yeah, and that's where I read some of the criticism of the coach who were still – trying to figure out if that's really his name.
Nick Nurse.
Nick Nurse. But, you know, that he didn't do what he should have done as a head coach in that situation to sort of gather the troops and let everybody calm down and stem the – listen, the revisionist history is very easy. It's very easy after
right.
the fact to go,
sure
well,
is.
Why didn't you do this? You should have put this guy. You should have done that. Okay. But there was some criticism being handed out there.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I put this on the coach at all. I mean, everybody was on the floor that needed to be there. I didn't see any issues with
lineups. No, it's on the team, in my opinion. But, you know, at the end of the day, you look at the facts of the, you know, with no Durant, with Thompson missing the fourth quarter, having the lead at halftime. I mean, you blew that game.
Understood. Yeah, you look back, you say, man, we had all these opportunities. Yep. And Thompson's. Durant. Yeah, yeah.
We lose this game. How do we lose this game?
Well, at least they've got home court.
Now, I haven't heard an update on Thompson, but can you imagine them losing, potentially facing a team with no Durant and no Thompson?
Well, Durant, if he's coming back, they said, what, game four?
Fourth game. Yeah, the Kerr, he's doing his best. He's being peppered with questions about it, but he's like, yeah, it's feasible he could practice once and then play, but right now he's not ready. It just doesn't sound like.
I mean, the Warriors have still, I mean, you know, you've still got two really underrated guys.
I mean, are you going to say DeMarcus Cousins, because he had a heck of a game?
He had a great game considering, you know, the kind of shape that he's in.
Right.
But I'm going to say Andre Iguodala and Draymond Green. And Draymond Green is thought of as a great defender in it, but he had a triple double in that game last night.
He had it in the game before where he didn't shoot particularly well in that game.
Yeah, I mean, he had 17, 10, and 9 yesterday.
Yeah.
And Iguodala was just ice water. I thought it was interesting to hear Jeff Van Gundy actually criticize that shot.
The shot that because he got on Mark Jackson's case after. He said you're coaching
after the fact.
After the fact, right. You're coaching the results.
But I agree with Mark Jackson. I mean, you got a veteran like Iguodala. He's wide open. He's not supposed to take that shot.
Yeah, I mean.
I mean, if it's a rookie maybe, or if it's someone who's not supposed to be there. But, I mean.
You take the shot. Yeah.
To me, this Warriors team, this run that they're on right now, the last 5 years, 4 years, they define the word champions to me. I mean, they're never out of it. They're tough. They've got talent at every position. They're poised. They've got veterans. They're well coached. I mean, what else do you want? They've got superstars. They've got probably the greatest shooter in the history of the game. They're just never out of it. They know how to pace themselves out over the course of a game, over the course of a series, and now they're proving they can do it without. I mean, they've already proved they can win without Durant, but they're still doing that. We'll see if they can continue to do it with Klay Thompson. I'd be shocked if they lost the series.
And I would say they're ultimately a likable team.
They are.
I would think if you're a hardcore NBA fan and your team is playing them, you don't like Draymond Green.
No, but I mean, I admire
everyone's
him.
Everyone's got a team like that, though. But, everyone's got a player like
but
that.
How can
yeah,
you
but
not
for the most
him?
Part, this is a pretty likable team.
Yep.
I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because on Saturday, I watched that 30 for 30 on the Orlando Magic and Penny Hardaway and Shaq. Have you guys seen that at all?
No.
Okay. I mean, they were a fun team in the day. They never achieved what they were supposed to, but they were a fun team to watch. And I started thinking about what does it mean to be a fun team, and are the Warriors that? I'm not sure I would describe them that way, but, I mean,
was it just the fun-loving nature of a young Shaquille O'Neal doing, you know, breakdancing on the floor and spinning?
So. I think so.
They seem to have a great time.
He's just a big goof. He has been his whole career.
Yeah, he was. And even the other guys on the team, the way they worked together, I mean, Nick Anderson and Penny Hardaway, there's just a, you know it when you see it, right?
What was kind of interesting about the Warriors game last night is at the same time 60 Minutes was rerunning the feature they did on them about a month ago.
During the game?
Yeah, during the, well, CBS.
Oh, they were rerunning.
So they were rerunning it. And, you know, you saw the guy, and you got a sense, you thought they had five guys there who were talking to John Wertheim. Durant was one of them, and you got a sense that they were trying to create pressure there that wasn't there. And you got a sense of what Kerr does. And I think Steve Kerr creates that environment that really allows them to still have fun when, you know, at this point, I mean, it's got to be a grind.
Sure, but they still look pretty determined out there. I mean
they're playing – this team is playing 100 games a year for how many years now running? I mean, you know, and they still –
5 years, and they've done it mostly with the same players. They've kept them all. Green, Iguodala, Curry, Clay. I mean, Cousins just got there. Who have they lost? I mean, Durant they added. He's been there a few years now.
Had Bogut there. They
Bogut, yeah. I mean, talk about having him coming off the bench. He made a couple of nice plays in the game, too.
Yeah, they just know how to win. They just know how to win. I mean, it just really is.
Are they the Patriots?
They're becoming.
Yeah, they are.
Except I think they're more likable. I mean, Belichick makes it hard to embrace them. You know, there's an arrogance about the Patriots and some fatigue. And maybe if the Warriors win this year, that fatigue will truly set in and everybody will start rooting against them.
Because if they start,
it just becomes like, all right, enough.
What if they start, you hear guys start barking, no one believed in us? Oh, that's what annoys me the most about the Patriots when they try and play the chip on the and I don't, you know, I don't blame them for doing it.
Man, even their own fans, I think some of them didn't believe that load of malarkey. No one believes in us.
Now, if the Warriors win this series without Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant, all right, it's not going to bother me as much.
No,
that's a good way to
I think
it.
Steve Kerr will develop a completely different level of appreciation and respect. Because you're going to look to the head coach to really galvanize that team, push the right buttons, put the right guys in. You've got two massive, massive players. Maybe your team, I mean, outside of Curry, who else could you lose that has a bigger impact on your team's success?
I think if you lost Draymond, that would be a huge
But Durant is arguably the best if he's in the conversation with LeBron. And then you lose Klay Thompson, who's just absolutely money for you. If you win without either of those guys, and again, we haven't heard anything on Klay. But if you were able to win without either of those guys, to me, you start looking at, I mean, with all due credit to the players, they're the ones that have to get it done. But Kerr receives an entirely different level of respect after that.
Did Jordan ever miss a finals game? I know he had the flu, and we know. But
I don't think so.
I don't think he ever missed a finals game the whole time. So, not Phil Jackson, if we're starting to your point about the coaching, if we're starting to compare Kerr to the all-time greats, I don't think Phil Jackson ever coached a game, a finals game. Without Jordan or Shaq or Kobe.
I don't think so.
Excuse me. He didn't have Shaq later in the 2000s, right. but during that initial run.
That's a good point. Somebody, Steve Kerr playing for him, too.
Somebody's saying, LOL, Del Curry's kid isn't the greatest shooter of all time. I disagree. I think he's
in the
conversation. I don't know if he stopped playing today, if you'd say that, but I'd say just in terms of a pure shooter, he's probably the best I've seen.
And he's got the most range of anyone I've ever seen.
It's ridiculous. I mean, to me, Ray Allen was the best shooter I've ever seen, with all due respect to Reggie Miller. I mean, there's been a million great shooters throughout the history of this league. But Ray was the purest shooter I'd ever seen. I think Curry is. I think Curry, if he plays another 5 years and he maintains what he's been doing, he'll go down as the greatest shooter in the history of this league.
Well, I think he's got the greatest, like I said, the greatest range I've ever seen.
I don't know what's out of his range.
I mean,
he puts up shots at times. I'm like, what are you doing? Oh, my goodness.
Normal. And that's when it was the funny thing about Kerr saying when they asked him how he coached this team on the 60 Minutes thing. And he said, you know, I don't. And he said, well, what do you say to Steph Curry? And he said, nothing. And then he brought up a story against, ironically, the Magic, and they had the video of it, of Steph getting the ball and then doing like a Curly Neal dribbling thing. And they showed Kerr, you know, which
was he wearing knee pads and sliding around on the floor?
Right, but he's dribbling through traffic and zipping around and everything like that. And
Curly Neal.
They switched the shot to Kerr, who's got his hands up in the air. Well, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then he spins around to about five steps behind the 3-point line at the top of the key and swishes a jumper. And you see Kerr just smile and sit down. He said, that was the moment I realized I don't really have to micromanage these
guys.
Well,
in the NBA, what are you going to do? I mean, you got to if you got guys who are that talented,
let them
right,
go.
They know the drill. Let them go out there and play. I mean, in football, you have to draw up every play. It's so micromanaged.
Right.
Basketball, the athlete. I mean, in my opinion, NBA athletes, I'm starting to believe that they're the best athletes that there are, maybe other than gymnasts. But of the ones that we watch, I mean, do you think they're better than NFL athletes? I do.
You can play the NFL if you're fat. It's very hard to play in the NBA if you're fat.
Right, and it's impressive if you're fat and you can move around like some of these guys do.
Right.
But just watching what the NBA players do at this level is unbelievable to me.
Who
that
was
they're able to do that.
Who's the guy for the Clippers? Hot Plate?
Yeah.
Hot Plate Williams?
Guy went to Michigan.
John Hot Plate was there. Is that his name, John Williams? Hot Plate
No,
Williams?
It wasn't John Williams. Well, there's the
Somebody
tractor.
Named Hot Plate. There was just a...
There's Big Baby. I mean,
there's Tractor played at Michigan.
Yeah, Robert Traylor.
Robert Traylor. This is a different, this is a big, I think he played for the Clippers. Somebody can text in and correct me, but he came spilling into the crowd going after a loose ball, and I think it might have been Calabro, but somebody goes, it's a flabalanche! it was just one of the funniest calls in the world because he was just, you know, he was a fleshy, doughy sort. But, you know, Oliver Miller was a guy who was a big flabby dude, but some of those guys... Sort of like heavyweight boxers that you see that look just doughy and completely out of shape, like they just stepped out of a cab or somewhere.
Speaking of
And then they go 12 rounds. You'll see them go 12 hard rounds. Or you'll see these guys running up and down the court. They don't have a muscle that's showing anywhere on their body, yet their endurance is unreal.
The endurance is what gets you in the modern game.
We'll talk about that later, won't we, Bob?
Yes, we will. Mm-hmm. Yes, we will. Because the ghost of Tyson Douglas has been brought up, and the greatest upsets of all time conversation has been brought up due to results over the weekend. So we'll definitely get into that. So Dwayne Casey will be with us again, former head coach of the Toronto Raptors, now the current head coach of the Detroit Pistons. He'll be with us at 1 o'clock. Angie Mentink from Root Sports will join us at 2 o'clock, talk some baseball. See what she would do if she were manager. What do you do? What do you do?
Keep that clubhouse together somehow.
Yeah, we'll talk to her about that, maybe get a question or two in there about the UW softball. I actually watched a fair amount of that over the weekend.
What a crushing loss.
I didn't enjoy the loss.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I talked about it. I love it on TV. It's a really very good entertaining sport. It is.
Honest question.
And look, even though they lost, that was pretty dramatic.
Yeah.
It was. I really felt bad.
Yeah, I did too, but a walk-off three-run homer by the pitcher.
Who threw 947 pitches?
Who struck out 16.
What'd she throw, 179? Was that the final total on her pitch count?
Something like that.
Oof. That's ridiculous. In the rules, I'm not completely up to speed on. Like, you can replace a pitcher, then that pitcher can come back in.
Right.
You can pinch hit for somebody. That person that was pinch hit for could come back in. I'm not up to speed on all the rules.
But it's entertaining, for sure.
Very entertaining.
Question.
So congrats to UW softball for what turned out to be a tremendous tournament, tremendous season. That was a lot of fun to watch.
Could they play better defense than the Mariners?
Yes.
Honestly, if you stuck them out there on at T-Mobile Park.
Yes. That's not a joke. That's not hyperbole. Yes.
I think I agree.
I logged that entire game yesterday. I had a little charity event beforehand that ended about 12:30. I came home, so instead of going out and enjoying the day, I wanted to rest a little bit. Well, look, the Mariners are on. I'm going to enjoy this.
And did you?
It was everything that's been wrong with the season, with the capper being, and as the one thing I tweeted out during the game, is what the bleep happened to Marco Gonzalez? What happened to this guy?
Don't know. Word is he could be tipping his pitches. You're throwing everything up there,
yeah,
right?
Someone suggested his velocity is off a little bit, which would mean that maybe he's dealing with an injury, which actually, in this case, wouldn't be the worst news.
Well, here's Scott Servais has asked the obvious question. Hey, is he healthy? Is he dealing with something physical here? Here's what Servais had to say.
Yeah, I believe so. Certainly, I've talked about it to nausea, just the crispness of his pitches and the finish. It's almost like at times you think they know what's coming. Just something else we need to look at. But just hasn't been the same here the last, four or five outings.
To nausea. I think he meant to say ad nauseum.
Yeah.
If he's nauseous by what he's seen, I'm not going to blame him.
Yeah, we're with you. We all need some Pepto.
Yeah, if he's hurting, then that explains everything. If he's not, then you got a real problem.
Unless it is one of those little subtle glitches that, he is tipping a pitch and everybody seems to be in the know. And, hey, when he does this, a fastball's coming or a chance, whatever, they know what's coming. It's an easy fix. We've seen that in the past. Now, my question would be, why did it take 6 starts to figure it out?
Correct.
Well, has he been doing it the whole time? I mean, you're right. There's been a lot of bad starts.
Well, he started 5-0, and now he's lost every game
since.
5-6. So,
yeah, but it's one thing to lose, but he's been getting hammered.
Yeah. So if, in fact, that's what's going on, he's tipping, he's totally healthy, but there's something in his mechanics that is tipping off the other team. Why did it take this long to figure it out? Gonzalez, after the game, commenting on his start.
I think it starts with being accountable. The way that I pitch is... it's just unacceptable. Not giving my team a chance to win. Exposing our bullpen too early in the game. I think that there's a lot of things I need to work on. So, first and foremost, I need to take accountability for that. I need to help this team win. I need to be a guy that's dependable and reliable, and that hasn't been the case. So, be the first one to say that's on me.
Well,
you need to be that. You're right about that.
I appreciate him saying it. I'm not sure what else you could say, right?
Marcos.
He could go Felix and go, just a couple bad pitches. For the most part, I felt pretty good.
Now, look, Marco is a super competitive guy. We know that. I think that part of that might be in his head there. I think he's so competitive. He's probably very hard on himself. Mm-hmm. He talked about being accountable for that. I'm sure he's holding himself accountable. And he's just got to work through it.
You look at the first 7 starts. You give me the numbers here. 5-0, 2.80 ERA. Batting average against was .260. He was averaging 6.8 strikeouts per 9 innings.
Yeah.
His last 7 starts. 0-6, 7.79 ERA, 5.6 strikeouts per 9, and a .328 batting average against.
I mean, that's worse than baseball stuff.
He went from the best to the worst. And we were talking about him as being one of the best lefties in the American League.
That's looking like a number one.
Not so right now.
One area where they have been consistent, though, is really lousy defense. really lousy defense. Whether it gets chalked up as an official error or not is irrelevant.
Well, it was funny because I texted you guys yesterday, how long do I have to watch this?
And luckily we were both out.
I was sailing.
Bob texted me, I'm heading to Bainbridge to ride the bike. What's going on? And I sent him a little screenshot of the score.
Right.
And then the next pitch was the Malik Smith play on Albert's line or center field shot.
Yeah. Here's Scott Servais talking about the defense.
Yeah, you know, when you don't throw strikes and you don't play defense, you don't make plays. I mean, that's it's hard to watch. And you know, you'll have ups and downs with the bat, you know, but you got to make the plays, you got to throw strikes, and when that doesn't happen, it's bad baseball. Is what it is, and I know we're young in some spots. We're inexperienced in some other spots, but you know, you got to continue to do the right things, and it's about throwing it over the plate and then catching the ball.
whatever they're doing is wrong.
Get ready to hear this a lot.
Bad baseball is what it is.
Yeah,
it is.
It's putrid baseball. It is, and he's listed. Yeah, listen, when you're not throwing strikes, you're not playing good defense. It's bad, but you're not doing anything. Yesterday was a prime example. You had three errors in the game. You weren't hitting. You weren't pitching. You had five total hits in the game. Meanwhile, the Angels had 15 hits and 13 runs.
You literally could have had five errors in the game.
Yeah, I mean, Malik Smith booted a ball that they didn't give him an error on.
And the Albert hit could have been viewed as an error. They call it a sun double.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong. We heard this from Stanton opening day, John Stanton, and I'm not pinning it all on him. But wasn't this year set up as a year where we knew that they would take a step back, but it wasn't going to be atrocious? Wasn't that the understanding?
Yes.
Like, hey, it's not a rebuild, it's whatever
else. It's a reimagination.
Yeah, we're just going to sort of, you know, stroll through this year and see what happens. I mean, the results so far couldn't be worse. I think that's the problem, is that this year was supposed to be one thing, and it's turned into something far, far worse.
Well, and we talked about the difference between losing and just getting destroyed.
Yeah. Or playing badly, or really playing poorly. I mean, that's what's going on here.
If you're being beaten because you're just outmanned, that's one thing. When you just go, hey, you know what? We're young. We don't have all the pieces, and hey, they hung in there. But when you're just booting the ball left and right, you can't throw strikes. You don't really do anything well. It's just different as a fan, where you could sort of brace yourself for, all right, not going to be this year. They're going to lose more than they're going to win, but hopefully we see some promise in the young players. They're just going out there, and it's just a gut punch.
When that happens, it's usually because your pitching's not good enough or your offense isn't good enough. You play the game okay, though.
Right.
And they're not playing the game well at all.
By the way, Graz, I got to give you credit on something. This whole time we've been talking about Encarnacion and Bruce getting traded. What's your reaction been?
That you're not going to get much for him. Is that what you mean?
Amen.
Yeah, and Bruce
were we under the impression they would get a bunch
for
Bruce?
No. It's just every single time we talk about that, some people seem to think, I feel like maybe in our audience, that when you trade those guys, you're going to just get, you know, this great return on it. You're not.
No. Low-A players.
Well, specifically not for Bruce. I mean, he made a lot of money and doesn't hit well, and he's toward the end of his career.
Follow me on this, though, okay, with the Met trade.
Yeah.
We traded Cano. We're paying a bunch
million.
Of his salary.
Right.
We get,
but got rid of a lot of it.
Well, ultimately, yes.
Yeah.
But we get Bruce, trade him to the Phillies, and we're still paying him?
Paying some of it, for sure.
Mets are still paying some of it, too.
The Mets, okay.
It's convoluted, but
I mean, there's no salary cap, so I don't really care what the Mariners do with their money. I'm just trying to, like they say in All the President's Men, follow the money. I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Well, what it is with Bruce and Encarnacion and those guys is more about creating, I mean, as nice as it is to have them around, you just need to create opportunities for younger guys.
Right. Yeah, sure. I mean, we talked about that, too, the logjam at first base, DH. But Bruce has been out in the outfield for a lot of this time, too.
Yeah, and he's been a leader in the clubhouse. I mean,
yeah,
you know.
They liked him. But, hey, we expected it.
He's got a $13 million salary next year, the remainder of the three-year deal he signed with the Mets in January of 18. Mets remain responsible for the second $1.5 million installment of his $3 million signing bonus. He was traded, obviously, for Class A infielder Jake Schiener. And cash consideration. So the Mariners, I had read that they were sending cash. They're getting cash. What that means, how much they're getting, I have no idea. But yeah, so the money's being divvied up and it's coming from different sources.
This is like trying to break down a dinner bill between five people.
Yeah.
Well, here's what you had the wine.
Just split it five ways. Just put five cards down there and say split it five ways.
I didn't have an appetizer.
So, yeah, they got a Class A infielder for a guy who's hitting barely over 200 toward the end of his career, making a lot of money. It's, I don't know. If somebody's disappointed with that and expected more, I don't know, the thing is, you're not going to get any more
well, for Encarnacion either.
But as Brent pointed out, Brent Stecker in the Sports Bit, he currently leads the Phillies in home runs.
He comes in as a leader. Comes in as a leader. All right. Speaking of money, there seems to be dispute about money when it comes to the Seahawks and a former second-round draft pick, Malik McDowell, who was piping up on Twitter over the weekend. We'll get into that story next year with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Bob Gross and Tom.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
All right, coming up at the top of the hour, our old buddy and Sonics assistant coach Dwayne Casey will join us on the program. Let's give you your pitching matchup quickly. It's brought to you by Heritage Distilling Company, makers of BSB Brown Sugar Bourbon. Your matchup is...
All right, we got an opener, evidently, for the Mariners, and then Wade LeBlanc, who's 2-2 with a 6.99 ERA. He's taking on Corbin Martin of the Houston Astros. Now, here's Yeah, exactly. Here's a little fun fact about...
He's probably good.
About Corbin
Martin.
Probably. No, he's really not. Innings pitched in each game, right by game. 5.1, 4.0, 3.1, 3.2. So he barely makes it out of the fourth inning, yet the Astros are 3-1 in games he's started.
Great.
Great.
They just win.
So does that mean he's just going to come in here and dominate?
Remember, it's baseball, though. The opposite should happen. This should be a Mariner series win.
I'm going to go against the baseball trend. I just wanted to say they don't win the series. They've given no indication that there's life there.
Bad baseball is what it is.
Yeah. And we don't know who the opener is, by the way.
Yeah, no word yet.
We're speculating. I don't know who the likely guy. I threw out Elias could be a guy, but I don't know who's the likely candidate. Brent said, well, you don't want to burn him there. I'm like, what does it matter?
Well, wait a minute.
What does it matter?
Why would it be Elias? LeBlanc is left-handed. Are they going to throw out a bunch? Are the Astros going to have a bunch of righties starting this game?
They may, but to me, the opener was used to limit the exposure to the meat of the order.
Mm.
Right.
So, yeah, left-hand, right-handed, that would play a part, but the bigger...
Not a big part, though.
The bigger issue is let's limit the exposure to the meat of the order, get the opener to get through it the first time. That way, the starter can get you, hopefully, five, six innings.
I'll tell you what, I'd rather see Elias out there for four innings than LeBlanc, regardless, wouldn't you?
I don't know. He's not pitching that well either.
Sound like Jim there. I don't know.
Bad baseball is what it is.
We're just all, whatever. Throw out anybody. I don't care. Whatever you want.
I still have
faith in Elias.
Okay.
I just like watching
him. I haven't lost faith in him. I'm just saying he's not pitching
particularly
well.
Lately, no.
Let's see who the opener is. We'll all enjoy it together. All right. Meanwhile, over the weekend, a man who's been as mysterious as anybody has been in this city, Malik McDowell, took to Twitter. How about this? I didn't even realize he had an account until I started seeing these tweets come up, and then I started retweeting them. But
he only has 9,000 followers. You'd think he'd have more, being as infamous as he is.
Yeah, I don't know how active he was before this, but he started off a string of them talking about how one of the best neurologists in the world cleared me to play football again. Dr. Jeffrey Kuchar, MD, neurologist versus the Seahawks. Dr. Samuel R. Broud, he goes to give you their credentials. He said, Seahawks had their own reasoning for not letting me play, but my head was not the issue. At the end of the day, I was cleared by a well-respected neurologist, and feel how you want to feel, is what he was trying to say. And then, people were ripping him for his grammar, and he said, I never knew there were so many lawyers and grammar teachers following me.
Yeah. Well, welcome to Twitter.
Right.
So basically he's just saying, hey, my injury was not the issue. I've been cleared to play. The Seahawks had their own reasons. One thing I wasn't aware of that I saw in this article is that they were initially trying to get his entire signing bonus back.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that either. And the arbiter was in arbitration, right?
Yeah, so it says
keep the first 2 years.
According to this article, the Seahawks originally tried to get all of the signing bonus, but ultimately were restricted to the amounts applicable to 2017 and 2018, the first 2 years of the four-year deal. Cutting McDowell after the 2018 season extinguished the ability to continue to recover his signing bonus. In theory, they could have tried to get the signing bonus allocations for 19 and 20. To do that, they would have had to keep him on the roster.
Why didn't they just keep him on the roster and then try to recoup it?
I don't know. Something we could ask John Clayton about. I'm not sure the ins and outs of the salary cap and guarantee. I mean, we've talked a lot about contracts in the NFL and how they move money around and all that good stuff. But, yeah, so originally what stood out to me is they were trying to get the entire thing back. And now they
And he's saying he was cleared to play.
Yeah.
I don't understand it at all. And he also actually went after the Seahawks doctor, who is a pediatric neurosurgeon.
But is also, this is the story that was in the Times, right?
Mm.
It also, he also has worked on the NFL with the NFL on concussion.
Yes,
stuff.
He has. I mean, look.
Where his doctor, the one that he uses, worked with the NBA on their concussion protocol.
Right. I'm not a neurologist. I know, and neither are most of you out there. But I'm guessing for an evaluation, a neurological evaluation, he's qualified, regardless of whether or not he's a pediatric or.
Yeah. Yeah. Listen, if he's. His agent said he's cleared. He said he's cleared. He's had an opportunity to speak with other teams. He said apparently he had spoken with the Cowboys. They didn't do anything with him. So is he implying that the Seahawks have put out misinformation to scare teams away? Or what? And I'm not sure what he's going for here, unless he's just trying to gain public sentiment and get it on his side. I'm not sure what it is he's trying to do here.
I think he's trying to say I was cleared to play, and
they have their own reasons for me not playing.
Right.
Therefore, I should be able to keep my money.
Exactly. It's not the stuff they're going after me for isn't what you think.
Yeah. And at the end of the article, it says, of course, publicly complaining about the last team that employed McDowell may not be the best way to persuade a new team to employ McDowell. So
no argument.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see this ending well for him.
I mean, it already hasn't. This is just insult to injury, literally insult to injury.
Yeah,
right. It's an injury, and then they're going after him in a way that they probably wouldn't with any other player.
If you believe everybody says, hey, it's just business, then that implies they would do that with anybody. Right?
I just don't remember this type from any team. I don't remember a team going after a player in this manner, trying to recoup all this money for any reason. Usually,
I don't either, but I will fully admit I don't pay attention to all the other teams and guys that get hurt. And
I've got a running list of these teams,
okay,
Bob.
Good.
Okay,
I'm glad you've kept track.
Well,
I mean, the guy was never on the team. He never played. It's 2 years removed. I mean,
it's definitely
is this
unique
unprecedented
situation.
Have we seen something like this with another team that comes to mind?
Clayton says, yeah. We asked him last week about it. He says, like you said, it's just business. That's the way it is.
Yeah,
but
he just implied
but he couldn't come up with any examples.
Yeah, I can't. I'm certain there's an example, and somebody could text it in of a player that was drafted, got hurt, never played. I don't recall a team saying, "All right, well, we paid him X amount of dollars. We want every one of those dollars back."
By the way,
I'm sure it's happened.
I'm not saying I blame the Seahawks for doing this either. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but if he was cleared to play, and this isn't about an injury, then what is it about?
Well, I don't know. That has to be determined, right?
Yeah, and what struck me as odd about it is that he was there after the accident, right? He was working out, not on the field, but he was rehabbing there. He was around them.
He had a helmet on, didn't he?
He was talking about him. I mean, so there was some sort of relationship. It wasn't as if he got drafted, he had the accident, and they lost all contact, and they've been separated ever since. That's not the case. Mm. He was there at the facility. He was rehabbing. Pete was answering, hey, he's working hard. He's competing to get back. We'll see. So there seemed to be some sort of relationship there, and now you fast forward to where we're at now. I'm wondering what happened.
Nada. You think he would come on the show to explain himself? I mean, he's already gone public. What if I tweet at him?
Yeah,
hey, brother,
why not?
Want to come on?
Yeah. Give your side of the story.
How do you think the Seahawks
worst
feel
he could do
that?
Is not respond. He'd be like the level 42, basically.
I went after him again this weekend.
Did you?
Yeah. You asked me on Twitter who's my favorite bass player, and I responded. Nothing. This guy doesn't like me.
He's just got so many requests, Tom. He doesn't have time for everybody.
Sorry.
All right. This time, Tom Brady has gone too far, by God. We'll explain next in Wait a Minute What with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Tom.
Hold up. Hey, wait a minute.
What?
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute.
It is Wait a Minute What here with Bob Gross and Tom. Coming up at the top of the hour, our buddy Dwayne Casey, former Sonics assistant coach, head coach of the Detroit Pistons, former head coach of the Toronto Raptors, who will join us at the top of the hour, so stay tuned for that. Meanwhile, a couple of stories here for you. How about Tom Brady files trademarks for Tom Terrific?
No.
Yep.
That's Tom Seaver.
Tom, terrific. Two new trademark filings for that.
If there's any great athlete who has the name Tom, don't we call him Tom Terrific? And I know Tom Seaver was definitely the main holder
of that. I
remember hearing
that him for years.
Exactly. And if your initials are LT, you get called LT, even though there's really just one LT.
Right. Yeah, LaDainian Tomlinson.
No. Although he was obviously a phenomenal player.
He was a phenomenal LT.
He's LT2, yeah. If anything. LT3, Lawrence Tynes.
of course.
Right, but I think Brady's going a little far with this one. You don't get to own that one. That's public domain.
The first Tom Terrific trademark application was filed for collectible trading cards, sport trading cards, posters, and printed autographs. The second filing that was made on the same day is for T-shirts, regular shirts. These filings indicate that Tom Brady's company is planning to launch a line of clothing called Tom Terrific. Also planning to launch a line of collectible trading cards with the same name.
No.
Tom Terrific.
Please when turn you, an end
would
to
you wear
this
a Tom Terrific shirt?
I would not.
Would you when you trademark something, does the committee that looks at this or the person, do they
the government.
Is it just up to them to arbitrarily evaluate whether or not you should get this?
No. I think if it doesn't exist, you get
you
it.
You just get it.
Yeah. I think if it doesn't if nobody else has got it.
Trademarked it, you can. That's how Pat Riley got three-peat.
That's where Graz and I dropped the ball on Legion of Boom.
Yep.
In a very, very big way.
And Paisley. Your producer should have been on that.
No, I blame us. We should have done it, Bob. We're the ones who had to know better.
We blew it.
If you trademarked that, you guys wouldn't be working here anymore. Man, you'd be wealthy.
I don't know how wealthy we'd be, but it would.
Sold a lot of merchandise.
Yeah, they did.
I remember the first day we saw somebody out there on the berm with the handwritten sign that said Legion of Boom. We're like, check that out. That's pretty cool.
That's cool.
Like, hey, somebody was listening. That's pretty cool. And then, boom, it's a thing.
We're losing money.
Look at all that money we're not making.
Was it Cam that said it?
Yes.
No. No,
well, it was actually a listener
right. That
Cam
came
talked
up.
About bringing the boom, right. So he was the spirit behind
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and then we said,
listener
let's come
texted
up with
it in.
Yeah, let's come up with a nickname. We got all these suggestions, and then when Richard Sherman was on, we ran them all by him, and he kind of nodded to that one, liked it.
Now, I was talking to you during the break about just where you're at weight-wise, and you're actually lighter than you're listed, and you said you feel faster, you feel better than you did last year, and you're talking about a new diet. What have you done in the off-season for the fans out there that's different now?
I've just been changing my diet up, just eating a lot cleaner, just eating chicken, fish, vegetables, fruit, trying to stay light to where I can run fast, but also still have that little weight to keep that boom, man.
The boom.
Well, you have to, man.
Bring the boom. You say keep that boom or bring that boom?
Bring the boom.
All right.
So there you go. All right. Story number two, Stephen A. Smith. Apparently, he interacted with Barack Obama.
All right.
It was at the game last night, sitting next to Adam Silver.
Yeah. So he tweeted, and I'm not interested in anybody's political opinion here. That's got nothing to do with politics. But Barack Obama could have done the sports world a great favor, and he didn't. It says, Stephen A. Smith tweeted out, just had the pleasure of meeting the man himself, Barack Obama. He's in the house at the game. I asked if I needed to calm down. He said, quote, nope, it's working for you. Run with it. No reason for me to go against his advice. Hashtag ha.
And the one person who could have made a difference in this world failed to do it.
I mean, you want to affect change? You want to bring hope?
Bob, that legitimately would have changed your life.
It would have.
If Obama had told him to calm down, to tone it down.
And I asked you when you brought this up, I'm like, all right, well, let's just say he went, yeah, you know what? You could dial it back to about a 6. Do you think he really would have done it?
He would no, but he would have considered it.
So the idea that he had some level of influence over this man, this obnoxious man.
If Obama told me to tone it down, I might. What do you think?
I'm doing what I think.
You think Stephen A. would have toned it down had he said, yeah, I think you could.
I don't think so. I don't think so. Stephen A.
He's a multimillionaire.
I just don't pay any attention to him because, like, I'd have the same reaction you did, Bob. He'd drive me crazy. I try and stay away from people who drive me crazy if I possibly can.
But if Obama told him to tone it down, that could have meant one less person to drive you crazy to worry about.
I think he would have. I think if I was Stephen A., I would have said, well, thanks for the advice, but this is working out pretty good for me right now.
I'm making $6 million a year being this guy. If I tone it down, maybe I only make 4. Yeah, who knows, man? I just
Ugh, he drives me nuts.
Stephen A.?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're not alone.
Like I said, I try to ignore him.
You're not alone there. One more. There was a massive upset in the boxing world over the weekend. I don't know how many people are even familiar with Anthony Joshua, British fighter.
When I saw his name, I thought he was a UFC fighter. I thought this was a UFC fight.
No, it was a boxing event.
Sad to know that I've never, sad to say, so far I've gone down in boxing, I've never heard of him.
You've never heard his name?
Nope.
Oh. Well, he was a champ. He's one of the champs. He had a few of the belts. Deontay Wilder is the other champ.
Right. I know him.
And Tyson Fury is the lineal champ, whatever, however you want to do it. But anyway, he fights a guy who was thrown in there about a month out. His original opponent.
Like Rocky Balboa.
Yeah. His original opponent tested dirty.
Okay.
So he wasn't fighting. They throw this guy in there who looks like a dwarf next to him. I mean, Joshua's an Adonis. You look at him, he is chiseled from stone. 6'6", 248, somewhere around there. I mean, probably 2% body fat. One of those guys.
Monster.
He goes up against Andy Ruiz, who looks like he's 5'7". They list him at 6'2". I question that. 268.
He looks He looks like Butterbean.
He's not fat.
He looks like he just left a competitive pie eating competition. I mean, he looks like anything but an athlete.
Yes.
So everybody's going, oh, this poor son of a gun is going to get just obliterated. He's short notice.
Sure.
He's short. He's not in shape. He's going up against this guy who's a physical freak of nature, and he ends up knocking him out in the seventh round. He's the first heavyweight champion of Mexican descent.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Wonder if that'll bring popularity back to a degree.
I would imagine if this man, with all due respect to what he achieved, which is great, if he were to fight Deontay Wilder, he would get hurt.
He probably won't.
Well, he's going to fight a rematch. There was a rematch clause in the contract, which Joshua said he's going to exercise immediately, so they should fight somewhere around November.
If you have that kind of build that Ruiz has, does that mean you can take a punch better? Or would you rather have like a hardened, you know, ab?
I don't know that it truly matters. I know people that have yeah, like how you're pointing to your ab as a hardened ab.
I'm hitting my ab to see if it hurts.
Or is it better to have a hardened ab like mine?
If you kept doing
actually,
this to me, it would
actually
hurt.
You wind up needing a better chin usually than a better body.
Okay.
Yeah. If you look up pictures of this guy, you're going, what does he do for a living? He's not an athlete.
So, Bob, this is an embarrassment for boxing.
What business are you in?
It's really bad for boxing in the sense that they were trying to set up Wilder versus Joshua, which would have been a big fight in the boxing world. And this throws that out the window.
But if he couldn't beat this guy, Joshua, then what would that
Well, he was undefeated going into
this fight.
Well,
it didn't matter. It would have
been
hype. Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's all about the hype. It's not about fighting anymore.
I mean, he's the guy that took out Klitschko. He knocked out Klitschko, won the belts there.
Maybe he was just stoned or something.
I think he was complacent. I think he looked at this guy and said, come on.
Yeah, exactly.
Look at him. He's tiny compared to
just
me.
He's like Apollo Creed.
Yeah. I mean, and what's interesting is he got knocked down. Ruiz got knocked down. Looked like, all right, this is it for this poor sucker. Yeah. I think it was like the third round.
Oh, he got knocked down.
He got knocked down in the third round and then got back up and then knocked Joshua down in that round twice.
Just like Rocky.
Wow. Yeah.
In the first fight.
Yeah. What a surprise this is.
And luckily, if you click on ESPN.com, they went to Stephen A. Smith for his thoughts on the fight.
Yeah, oh, I bet.
This man ruined the sport. Took away the biggest competition we were going to see in this sport since Floyd Money Mayweather.
Oh, God. And that concludes your boxing segment.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, big up. It was not, by the way, I just want to say for those saying, this is the biggest since Tyson Douglas, and
no.
it's not on that level.
No.
I'm sorry.
Someone's got to be great.
Joshua's
be
dominance was nowhere near Tyson's. He didn't have the reputation. He didn't have the resume. It's not the same, but it was a big upset. All right, coming up, we will speak with a man who knows the Raptors as well as anybody. Their former head coach, former Sonics assistant, and just an all-around good guy, Dwayne Casey, joins us next year with Bob Gross and Tom on 710 ESPN Seattle.